This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Mary Fisher represented the AIDS community in the 1992 Republican National Convention. Skeptics thought she was there because she was unlikely to alienate anyone. She's a straight, white mother of two who never injected drugs and whose father was the honorary chair of the Bush Reelection Finance Committee. But when she asked the Republican Party to lift its shroud of silence on AIDS, when she spoke about being HIV positive, and expressed fears about the future of her two young sons, even the skeptics were moved. After the convention, Fisher became a tireless AIDS activist, traveling around the country, trying to dispel the myths about AIDS and the people who have it. Some of her speeches are collected in a new book called Sleep with the Angels. Betty and Gerald Ford are godparents of her oldest son. I asked Fisher if she sought Betty Ford's advice before deciding to go public about having HIV. After all, Ford had gone public with her own medical problems.
Yes, I spoke to Betty Ford and the president about what to do, how to make a difference was really my question to her. When I told them that I was HIV positive and we went through the trauma that any relationship goes through, we knew that there was going to be something I had to do because that's just my nature. And Betty has been a role model for me for many years. I asked her how or what would it take? Where would I make a difference? I asked a lot of people this, but I certainly took her counsel to heart. She was the one that probably held me off more than anybody else, because her advice was, once you say it, you can't take it back, so be very certain that this is what you want to do.
A lot of AIDS activists were really very angry with the Republican Party for what they saw of a lack of initiative to conduct AIDS research and to speak out about AIDS. Were you angry with the party, too, being a Republican yourself, when you spoke before your party's convention?
Terry, I have not a lot of anger inside. I don't like to live like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it's productive. I've worked in and out of Washington for many years and know so many people here and realize that the way I can be of the best service is if I can work within the system. And the system doesn't handle anger very well. It handles constructive criticism. It handles suggestions, it handles discussions, but it doesn't handle anger very well. So my anger would not have been productive. I needed to help people get over the myths, try to begin to break down some of the walls of stigma so that they would at least hear what I had to say.
There was a documentary about you that was broadcast on Nightline. And within that documentary, you know, they had followed you around on various speaking engagements and at home. And at one of your speaking engagements, a young girl came up to you after you had done speaking, and she was crying and she was saying that I can't remember whether she had AIDS or HIV, but she felt the need to keep it secret, but she wanted to talk to you about it. But of course, all of this was picked up on the microphone and by the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very moving moment. And also a kind of surprisingly public one for for the girl who was trying to maintain her secrecy. I wondered what that moment was like for you.
It was a very hard moment because I knew the cameras were there and I wanted to protect her, and yet I knew she needed to talk to me, and that becomes difficult. That's not an unusual moment, Terry.
This happens to you all the time?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. There are people that don't tell anybody but may come and share it with me because they also know that I'm going through it. I since have become friends with this young girl and her family and must tell you they are wonderful, wonderful people. And it's very difficult what AIDS does, not just to the person who is infected, but to the people that love us, to the people that live with us, to the people that surround us and work with us.
Let me get back to this girl.
Mm-hmm.
Has she changed her attitude about keeping it a secret since you spoke with her and since you've become friends?
Well, her attitude has been that she wants to talk about it. I think that it's now a part of the family discussion. And it's not something that any of us come to easily. It's not like you find out you're HIV positive or that you have AIDS and automatically you want to tell the world. It doesn't really happen like that. I think that the process that any family goes through takes time. And they are in that process.
Can you tell us a little bit about your own process, how after you found out that you were HIV positive, how you decided to tell people beyond your family and then to tell the public and to use it as an opportunity to discuss the issue politically and socially?
When I found out I was HIV positive, I was, of course, devastated, because it's a terrible thing to learn when you don't believe that you're at risk. So coming to grips with some of that and coming to grips with my own mortality, and I don't know if we ever really come to grips with it, but that was a process that began with my family, with my doctors. And as some of that pain subsides, it's fairly in my nature to want to talk about things and to talk about what's going on in my life with my friends. I found it uncomfortable not to be able to say, when someone would say, "How are you?" to tell them what was going on. And I found that to be more and more a problem for me. And then I realized that I was hiding something from my children and hiding something from my children's parents, friends, and all the people that surround them, and that at some point somebody was going to know and the children were going to hear things, and that wasn't really fair to them, and that I didn't want them to live like that. And this process went on. My doctor said he wanted me to wait for 6 or 7 or 8 months and to make a decision, because when you're in a crisis, it's not a good time to make a decision. And so during this period of time, I talked with people he recommended. I talked to my friends. I talked to family. I spoke to Betty Ford and the president, as I have said before, and asked the question, if I can make a difference, what could I do? Where could I throw the rock and get the most ripples? And everyone said, in the AIDS community, outside the AIDS community, if you could tell your story and felt comfortable just talking about you as a mom and how you contracted the disease and what it means to you and how you're dealing with it, that would make a difference just in and of itself. And if you could help one person. And I went into it believing that this was going to be good for my children. I wanted them to know that I stood for something and that I had the ability to help other people, and that even when we're faced with life challenging problems, that we can turn it around and live the way we would like to live.
As you said before, it was a real shock to you when you found out that you were HIV positive, because you didn't think you fell into any of the risk categories. So it's something you hadn't really given any thought to. Your ex-husband, and you were divorced by then, had called you to tell you that he had HIV. What? Tell us more how you found out.
When Brian, who was my former husband, called to tell me that he was HIV positive, I was, because we had been divorced for a couple of years, was very concerned about him and worried for him. I didn't even at that point worry about myself. And then, of course, I went to have a test right away. And even when I found out about me, I was more than concerned about my son. It's a mix of emotions that throws you into almost a never-never land, like a twilight zone, because you have to keep going day to day, but you don't know how you do that. It's almost like being in shock. I was certain that I wouldn't get through that time of my life. I don't know. I suppose maybe with a spiritual foundation and wonderful family and friends, I made it through. But I really don't even know how to this day I made it through.
Were you angry with your husband? I mean, with your ex-husband, because, you know, you had gotten it from him. And even if just like on a purely irrational level, anger.
Oh, at times,
you know,
absolutely. He was angry. We were both angry. We were angry at the system. We were angry with each other. We were angry and hurt, because what do you do with the emotions? Where do you put it? I find that I don't deal well with anger, and I don't like to blame. And forgiveness has been a really, a very large part of this for me. and I think for Brian at the end, and we mended much of our relationship. You know, I don't know if you can understand coming out of a divorce and going through a divorce and then having to face this. We had a lot of things that we needed to mend and to heal, and if not for us at the time, at least for the children. So it's the same piece about the anger is that I don't find anger productive. Didn't want to live in that place, but it took me some time to get over that part. Anger is just one emotion as you're dealing with loss.
For a lot of people who find out that they have HIV, telling people that they have HIV also ends up sometimes telling those people about personal things those people didn't know about before. For some people, other people find out that they're gay. For some people, it leads to information about intravenous drugs that they've used in the past, or, you know, a sexual relationship that nobody knew they'd had or something. I mean, that's sometimes the case, you know, that a secret becomes public after saying that you have HIV. I believe with your husband, a secret that he had kept from you was that he had used drugs, and that you found out about that after he told you about the HIV.
I welcome the question very often because I believe this is the only disease where people want to know how you got it. And in many ways, I resent that. Mm-hmm. I resent it because it shouldn't matter how a person contracts this disease. The important part was that I contracted this disease in my marriage. And for a very long time, I would say that what Brian did was what Brian did, and that anyone would have to talk to him about his. He said that it was, he assumed that it was from experimenting with IV drugs. I knew that he had experimented with drugs. I didn't know the extent of it. It was never an issue. He wasn't doing that when I met him, and it wasn't part of our relationship. So this was a disease that it was contracted by him many years ago. It was somehow passed to me during our relationship, during our marriage. That is really the important piece of my whole story.
That it was in marriage.
It was in marriage. It was what, you know, people want to look at as any kind of relationship that anybody would have or that has. It makes one stop and think about their relationships.
You know, how you said that this is the only disease where people want to know, how did you get it? Do you think maybe part of the reason for that is that, I mean, I just asked myself, so I had my reasons for asking, but I think often people ask because, for some people, the world of AIDS is divided into the innocent sick and the guilty sick. You know, the innocent sick are the people who got it through blood transfusions, and the guilty sick are the people who got it through things we don't like, homosexuality, drug use. Do you know what I'm saying? And so there's this division in a lot of people's minds about whether somebody, like, deserved it or not.
Well, but, I mean, nobody deserves this disease.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean,
I'm just saying, nobody tries to get this disease. I don't think there's an innocent and a guilty. I don't consider myself a victim. I think that one of the reasons people like to ask, Terry, is because they would like to say, I didn't do that. Therefore, I must not be at risk. I don't need to worry about it. If you didn't do what I did, then you're not at risk. And people like to take themselves out of risk categories. I now need to tell you that everyone is at risk. There are no categories anymore. 90% of all new AIDS cases or HIV cases are heterosexual by nature. So I don't know where. I think it's because we're in denial. I think because there's a lot of fear. I think people don't want to deal with this disease. Therefore, they'll make people innocent and make people guilty. I think people like to judge, and I'm sorry for that because it really does create divisions in communities where we don't need to do that.
My guest is Mary Fisher. I'm sure you heard her speak at the Republican convention about being HIV positive. She's become a tireless AIDS activist. There's a new collection of her speeches, and that's called Sleep with the Angels, A Mother Challenges AIDS. She also founded the Family AIDS Network. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Mary Fisher, a collection of her speeches about being HIV positive is now out. It's called Sleep with the Angels. I think the line that really choked people up when you spoke at the Republican convention was when you said, if it's true that HIV inevitably turns to AIDS, then my children will inevitably turn to orphans. How have you explained HIV to your children?
My children are 4 and 6. They're really young. They understand. We first had to go through Brian's illness and Brian's death. I didn't want them to think that their mom was going to die tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't explain to them that I am exactly like their dad in that instance, because I feel that I don't want them to have fear. Mm-hmm. On a daily basis, that I'm going to be sick. Children don't understand illness unless if you're sick, you go to the doctor, you stay in bed, you physically are, you have manifestations of this illness. They don't see that with me. So we mainly talk about AIDS as a disease. We talk about HIV also as a disease. They know what I do. They've heard me speak. I answer their questions when they come up.
Do their questions ever really throw you? Are you ever unprepared for some of the things they want to know?
Just like any parent would be. You know, it comes out of left field and you don't expect it. And sometimes they're asking a question and I have a tendency to attach a very serious answer to it when that's not really what they wanted to know at all. You know, it was more like about the ribbon or something. So I have to really hear what they're asking me.
The Republican convention at which you spoke had an attitude that was pretty anti-gay, especially in the Family Values campaign. And so many AIDS activists are gay, and the gay community has been so hard hit by AIDS. How do you feel about the way your party has handled homosexuality, and how do you feel about how your party has dealt with AIDS?
I feel that everyone needs to understand my position. I don't feel these are political issues. I think there are Republicans that understand, and there are Democrats that understand, and there are Republicans and Democrats alike that do not understand and do not accept. I was never raised that way, Terry. I can't judge one person or not for caring about or having compassion for. I think part of it is people just don't understand, and they don't take the time to understand. They don't take the time to hear what people have to say.
Are you talking about AIDS or AIDS and homosexuality? Or?
Both. Mm-hmm. I feel very strongly that we are all the same, that we are one. I really feel this way. I don't feel any different. As a woman with AIDS, I have many friends who are gay, but so what? I don't think it makes any difference. I have always had friends who are in the gay community. It's never been an issue with me.
But I mean, for the party, for the Republican Party, it was an issue.
Well,
and they did politicize it. So I'm wondering how you responded to that, unless you'd rather not talk about it.
No, it's not that. It's just I responded by giving my speech and saying how I felt and being as honest and true as I could be to my own values. And I think that it's, my speech spoke for itself.
Do you think that it reached anyone in the party in a way they hadn't been reached before?
AIDS education is a process. I do believe that it reached some people. And I believe that there are many people in the party that will never be able to think about this disease exactly the same way again. They need to hear it again and again and again. Because people don't automatically go from not understanding, not hearing, to action. There's a tremendous amount of steps that happens in between. So it's my hope that they did. I really don't have any way of knowing or of measuring that. It's just a hope. And all I can do is throw it out there and hope that they catch it.
Before you got HIV, did you ever think of yourself as having the capability of becoming a public speaker, of becoming such a public person?
No, I never thought of myself as a public person. Our family, I was raised in a family that was fairly public in Detroit, but not like this at all.
You know, I'm thinking like you're saying your family was a public family, but in that way where they're public for their deeds, not for their feelings and for their personal lives. Did your parents understand what the impact would be when you started talking about your life, and did they support you in going public about the personal? You know, there is that old saying that the personal is political. That's very hard for a lot of people.
My family supported me. In the beginning, I think that they had some trepidation about what I was going to say and how I was going to say it and how it would affect the family. I think that they have seen, as time has gone on, how important it has been.
I bet they were worried about it being embarrassing in some way. Not your illness, but just speaking that personally in public.
Well, I think people that don't talk about themselves in public would have that fear. And if they had that fear, they didn't want to stop me. They wanted me to do what I felt was important for me to do. They all said that they would support me in doing it. I do know that they had that fear, because we'd never done it. It wasn't something that we did. But I think in the long run, they've seen that it's been important and that it's helped other people. And that's the key, because I was raised like that. I was raised that it's important to help others. Mm-hmm. And they see that this has.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Mary Fisher's new book, Sleep with the Angels, is a collection of her speeches. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.